I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's going to be a busy week in Congress as the House tackles the findings of the Mueller report. Yesterday, John Dean, President Nixon's White House, former White House counsel, and three others testified before the House Judiciary Committee hearing on, quote, lessons from the Mueller report, presidential obstruction and other crimes. Tomorrow, the House Intelligence Committee is looking into Russian meddling in the 2016 campaign. Today, the Judiciary Committee is voting on a civil contempt lawsuit against Attorney General Barr and former White House counsel Don McGahn over subpoenas, even though the Justice Department began handing over documents requested by the committee. We asked Mara Liasson to join us. She is national political correspondent for NPR. And Mara, nice to have you back with us on Radio
Times. Happy to be here.
Have the impeachment hearings begun? We just are not calling them impeachment.
I don't think the impeachment hearings have begun. I think that opening formal impeachment hearings is a very big red line. When that happens, we'll know it. These are not impeachment hearings. This is an effort by the House Democrats to build public support before possibly launching an impeachment hearing. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, feels very strongly that if you don't have public sentiment with you, and right now majority public opinion is against impeachment, you can't get anywhere because you won't be able to convince Republicans in the Senate to remove the president. And she believes that that impeaching the president in the House, which is the equivalent of an indictment, but failing to convict him, in other words, remove him, which is the job of the Senate, would give President Trump a huge victory. She's not saying she's going to sit back passively and wait for public opinion to change. She believes in shaping it, and that's why they're holding hearings. That's why they're continuing to investigate the president on a whole bunch of other things in other committees.
Well, I watched some of those hearings yesterday on C-SPAN, and they sure were partisan.
Yes. And if I were Bob Mueller watching those hearings, yep, I would say, ooh, I think I really, really was right when I decided I didn't want to testify. Well, that's, in public, at least.
Just because it was just so clear that each side had staked out their claim and their evidence and either used it to opine about whatever opinion they had or to shape the conversation.
Right. And look, this is a holding pattern. I mean, to have John Dean testify, he's not a fact witness. He's not involved in any way or has some knowledge about the underlying facts of the Mueller report. He was there to say, look, this is like Watergate. The special counsel is giving you a roadmap to impeachment. But what the people they really wanted to come before them, like Don McGahn or Bob Mueller, they have failed to get them so far. So you could say John Dean was a kind of stand-in.
How do you think he did?
I think he was fine. I think it was irrelevant. I mean, I think that what matters is if the public changes their opinion about Donald Trump because of these hearings. And I think until they can get Mueller to testify, look how important it was when Mueller went on television and said nothing that wasn't already released publicly in his report. He didn't say anything new, but that appearance at the Justice Department made news because most people, including most members of Congress, are not going to read the 445-page report.
Well, I can understand why a lot of the public hasn't read it, but frankly, Mara, I don't understand. If you're a member of Congress, don't you think you should read the report?
Well, yes.
I mean, I just feel like that's part of your job to do that.
Well, yes, I can't argue with that. But I'm just telling you that most members have not. Yeah.
Well, what do you make of the fact that there are these and apparently there's going to be a vote today on a contempt resolution against Attorney General William Barr, former White House counsel Don McGahn for refusing congressional subpoenas. Let's say they vote and it's the majority Democrats that they will vote in favor of that. What is the next move then for the House?
OK, well, let's be really clear. Okay. Gerald Nadler announced that he is not going to move to hold Barr in criminal contempt. That vote is off for now.
OK.
It could be revived later. They are going to move forward with taking Barr to civil court to enforce their subpoena to get the underlying documents. They are negotiating right now with the Justice Department and the Justice Department and the House Judiciary Committee has made some progress. They're going to actually get access to some of the underlying documents, not the grand jury documents, but some other ones. So the Justice Department can still run out the clock, but they're not 100% across the board, barring the Democrats from seeing anything that they've asked for. So because those negotiations showed a little progress, Nadler said, OK, we're not going to move right now to hold Barr in criminal contempt, but we are going to go ahead with our lawsuit to go to civil court to enforce our subpoenas to get more documents.
What does that mean, though? I mean, let's
that means that they can that maybe they'll be able to pry open a few more of the documents from the Justice Department than the Justice Department is willing to give them right now. They're trying to get as much information as they can, although there is an argument being made by some Democrats that say, why are we wasting all this time getting the underlying documents? Isn't there enough in the report itself to go forward?
And let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Mara Liasson, national political correspondent for NPR, getting our conversation started, talking about this busy week in Congress, a number of hearings, an important vote today. And we'll be talking a bit later on in the show about some of the pros and cons of impeachment. You can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. I do want to play a clip from Nancy Pelosi. This was actually last week at a news conference, but it I think describes a bit where she stood, at least on June 5th, on this whole pressure on her to go ahead with some kind of impeachment inquiry.
I travel all the time in the country. Do you know most people think that impeachment means you're out of office? Did you ever get that feeling, or you're just in the bubble here? They think that you get impeached, you're gone. And that is completely not true. And I may have thought that myself 50 years ago. But you get impeached, and it's an indictment. It's an indictment. So when you're impeaching somebody, you want to make sure you have the strongest possible indictment. Because it's not the means to the end that people think.
Mara, what do you make of the fact that she said, I believe more recently, that President Trump should be in prison?
Well, for the prison comment, I interpret as Nancy Pelosi has to balance two things. The calls from about a couple dozen of her liberal members in safe districts who want impeachment. And so she's saying, look, I'm with you. I think the president should be in prison. But what she just said about impeachment was what I said previously,
right,
which is most people don't understand what impeachment is. Impeachment in the House is an indictment. The trial occurs in the Senate, and an impeachment that results in an acquittal, which is what would happen as long as the Senate is held by Republicans, would be a huge victory for President Trump. This is what happened to Bill Clinton. He was impeached by a Republican House. He was acquitted by he was impeached by a Republican House. He was acquitted in the Senate, and his numbers went up, 10 points. He'd already won re-election, so it's different than Trump. But what she's saying is this: if you cannot remove the president, then you shouldn't impeach him. Now, what she was saying about public opinion, I have not seen polling that says that asks people what they think impeachment is. But my instinct is that she's right. Most people, when they say, yes, the president should be impeached, are saying, I don't like him. I want to get rid of him. Let's impeach him. They don't understand that impeachment is not removal.
And it seems Senator McConnell's made it very clear that the Senate will not abide by what the House decides.
Well, no, of course not. Of course not.
And so I guess so for her, it is, a political calculation. I'm thinking actually of Connor Lamb. He's a newly elected representative from Western Pennsylvania, came from essentially a pink or red district. She's concerned about those people and the price that they might pay if impeachment goes ahead, but the Senate essentially quashes it.
Well, she should be, because those are the districts, the Connor Lamb districts, that are going to determine whether the Democrats hold their majority in 2020 or lose it. It's not going to matter what happens in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's district in New York. That's an 85% Democratic district. The Democrats, if they lose 18 seats, they go back into being the minority. There are 31 Democrats in Trump districts. In other words, districts where Trump beat Hillary Clinton in 2016. And those are the districts that she should care about. Those were the majority-making districts. And what we hear from members in those districts who go home, they are not hearing calls for impeachment from their constituents.
I'm wondering, even looking back at Clinton, I don't know if you go back as far as Richard Nixon, Mara Liasson, but are there lessons from previous, certainly with Clinton, who was impeached in the House, are there lessons, you think, from those proceedings?
Well, some Democrats are drawing the lesson that, look, you know, on the day that President Clinton was impeached by the House, his numbers went up from 63% approval rating to 73, something like that. They jumped up 10 points. So that impeachment was seen as partisan. People thought he should not be removed from office for lying about sex. But on the other hand, historical rules only work till they stop working. And I think it also can be a mistake to kind of draw lessons from history. They might not work this time. But I do think that the House leadership, especially Nancy Pelosi, believes that if impeachment is partisan, in other words, only Democrats voting to impeach, it will not get the bipartisan buy-in, the public support that you would need to bring it to its completion in the Senate. And there could be a backlash. She believes Donald Trump wants the House to move towards impeachment. He knows he'll never be removed from office. And Pelosi thinks that he will then use it as a weapon to rally his base, to paint himself as a victim of partisan Democrats, and he will profit from that in 2020.
And there's only one Republican in the House that has gone public about...
Only one. Justin Amash. And what's really interesting, there's not a single Democratic Justin Amash. And what I mean by that is there's not a single Democrat who is taking a political risk by calling for impeachment. In other words, Justin Amash took a risk. He's a Republican and he's right. going to be primaried and the president is going to support his primary opponent. But there's not a single Democrat in the House from a swing district who's come out for impeachment. In other words, every Democrat who's for impeachment is in a safe district. They have nothing to worry about.
Well, and I thought it was interesting. There was a woman who I believe was at his town meeting who said, you know, I had no idea that the Mueller report came to some of these conclusions.
Well, no, because very few people have read it. But Justin Amash has read it, cover to cover.
Is he, and I believe he's resigned from the
Freedom Caucus, and he was a founding member. He is was a Tea Party libertarian Republican. He calls himself a constitutional conservative. He's been at odds with the Republicans in the House on many other issues, but... that town meeting, he got a pretty warm welcome. We don't know how many of those people were anti-Trumpers, but it'll be really interesting to see if he can hang on in that district. Other people who have broken with the president, other Republicans who've broken with the president have not fared so well. Mark Sanford in South Carolina is an example of that.
Mara, we're almost out of time here. So what can we expect this summer?
What can we expect? I think we can expect more investigations, and not just in the Judiciary Committee, but in the Financial Services Committee. We're going to be hearing about Trump's financial dealings, about Deutsche Bank, government oversight. There's all sorts of things that will be investigated. Do I think that we're going to move to impeachment over the summer, open formal hearings on impeachment? No, I do not.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Mara Liasson, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And she is a national political correspondent for NPR, as I mentioned, getting our conversation started. And we've got two more guests waiting in the wings, Jonathan Capehart from The Washington Post, Julian Zelizer from Princeton University, talking about the pros and cons of pursuing impeachment. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoena, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. A new CNN poll revealed that 40% of Americans believe President Trump should be impeached and removed from office. Dig a little deeper, and there's a wide gulf between Republicans and Democrats over impeachment, with the president enjoying overwhelming support from Republicans. Meanwhile, a growing number of Democrats running for the presidential nomination favor impeachment. Here's Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, and Cory Booker.
The information that has been given to us in the Mueller report clearly constitutes adequate information to begin an impeachment proceeding in the House of Representatives.
I believe that the president deserves to be impeached.
When we talk about a process of impeachment,
It is about the checks and balances that the framers imagined would be in place to be a check against abuses. And that is another reason why I support that process.
Hold Trump accountable. Go forward with an impeachment inquiry.
Impeachment proceedings will give us more legal leverage to be able to get the information Congress needs to get to the bottom of what his administration has done while they're in office.
There is pressure on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to begin hearings on impeachment coming from her party, and so far she is slow walking the issue. Yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing titled Lessons from the Mueller Report, Presidential Obstruction and Other Crimes, and that put some of the testimony given to Mueller in the public record. We asked Jonathan Capehart to join us. He's opinion writer for The Washington Post, host of the Cape Up podcast. And Jonathan Capehart, we've been wanting you on for a while. Nice to have you with us on Radio
Times. Thank you, Marty.
Also with us, Julian Zelizer, joining us from the NPR studios in New York. And he's professor of history, public affairs at Princeton University, also a CNN political analyst and co-host of the podcast Politics and Polls. Julian's been on a bunch of times. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan, let me begin with you. And let's begin with Nancy Pelosi. Obviously, a lot of pressure on her to, at least coming from her left flank, to not just begin impeachment proceedings, but to really make sure that they result in the impeachment of the president. She is reluctant to do that, I think, for a whole host of political reasons. How do you understand her position, and do you think it's the right one?
This is a really tough issue. And in fact, I'm thinking of writing a piece that will basically be putting myself on the couch to try to understand my own conflicted feelings. On the one hand, you know, Speaker Pelosi, as you mentioned, she's dealing with the left flank of her caucus who are hearing their constituents who are demanding that the president be held accountable and that impeachment proceedings happen, or as the way they're talking about it on the Hill, impeachment inquiry begin. But on the other hand, and in Speaker Pelosi, we have someone who has lived through an impeachment battle before, and that was the impeachment of President Bill Clinton back in the 90s. And even though that effort failed, what ended up happening was that Republicans won the White House in 2000. They increased their seats in the House and I don't think in the Senate, but what Speaker Pelosi is desperately afraid of, I don't want to say desperately afraid of, as a leader, she wants to protect her caucus, and particularly those members who come from districts that President Trump won in 2016. Her job is to protect her majority, protect her caucus, and right now she views an impeachment proceedings and even an impeachment inquiry as something that puts that in danger. That as we see in the headlines of the president continuing to do things that defy the rule of law, makes it even more difficult for Speaker Pelosi to maintain that position.
Julian, let me go to you. And with all that Jonathan Capehart just said there, are there reasons to impeach President Trump?
Sure. I think there's many. I do think the speaker has a difficult choice and she's in a difficult position, as it always should be when you're dealing with something as big as impeachment. But one, there's an argument of principle, and that if the case is so strong, as all the Democrats at this point, including Pelosi, seem to agree, that a party has a responsibility in a case like this to hold the president accountable, to go on record via the House, at least, and to say this is not tolerable, and that history has to see when we look back at this period that Congress was not okay with the way the president flexed his power. And then second, there is politics. And to me, it's unclear how this plays out. You can also make an argument to the speaker that the party moving forward would energize a lot of Democrats and see that their party is willing to do something. It would force President Trump to contend with all the accusations that would come out of an inquiry and possible vote on articles, as opposed to what he's going to be talking about instead, which is, you know, a garbage can of conspiracy theories, insinuations, and accusations. And that it's not necessarily the 1990s. It's not clear this case is the same as President Clinton.
Well, I wonder, Jonathan, you're probably not old enough, but I certainly remember the 1970s and the Watergate hearings and the vote in the House to proceed, the committee House to proceed with impeachment hearings for Richard Nixon. He, of course, resigned before all that happened. Are there lessons from that era that you think apply today? Are we in just a completely different territory?
Well, I agree. I agree with Julian that, you know, this is a completely different time than Clinton's impeachment in the 90s or even during Watergate. But one of the lessons I think that we can learn, and certainly folks on the Hill have been, some folks on the Hill have been making this point, that through the impeachment, through the Watergate hearings on the Hill, the American people were educated about what President Nixon had been doing, the illegal things he had been doing, and the people around him who were carrying out his orders. And that's one of the reasons why there is a clamor among Democrats now, according to NBC, that's been doing a whip count. There are now 61 members of Congress who are calling for an impeachment inquiry to happen. And the thinking is, through those hearings, as happened during the Watergate era, the American people will hear, learn, and understand what the president did and why he needs to be held accountable. And that's why I think we're in this sort of vice grip, this being pulled in different directions. On the one hand, an impeachment inquiry would allow for Congress to really focus its committees and the people on the Hill on very specific charges or inquiries into the president's actions, which would basically command, at least they hope, the public's attention and have them learn what's in the Mueller report. Because we all know most people have not read the Mueller report, and most people will never read the Mueller report, which is why there are many Democrats on the Hill who are saying, let's do hearings so that if Special Counsel Mueller, at a minimum, does what he said he would do a couple of weeks ago when he talked to the nation, saying, if you bring me up to the Hill, you're not going to get more from me than what's in the report. Well, what's in the report is damning enough. And that's something I think Democrats would love to have happen, if only to have the American people hear again with their own ears from an authority what the president did.
Well, Julian, don't you need Mueller to talk about the Mueller report? We had some stand-ins yesterday, including John Dean, who said, look, I'm not a fact finder here. But don't you need some of the players? You need McGahn and some others in order to give what's in the Mueller report some heft.
So it would certainly be very helpful. And that was, brought back when John Dean just testified. The reason John Dean's testimony was dramatic back in 1973 wasn't because he was an expert talking about impeachment. He was a top member of the administration involved in the cover-ups, revealing what they had done to Congress. So you need players like a John Dean at the moment to help build the kind of political case you're talking about. I don't know what, more Robert Mueller would say. He said a lot, and he even then had a press conference outlining exactly what he had said. But certainly the leverage that the Judiciary Committee would obtain if this turned from oversight hearings into impeachment hearings might be great enough to start compelling witnesses to come forward. And that's part of the argument some Democrats on the Hill have been making. It sounds like even Chairman Nadler made that argument to Pelosi. Otherwise, the administration will just stonewall. This will get tied up in the courts, and you're going to be exactly where you are today in a few months, kind of this middle-of-the-road process that doesn't do anything other than allow President Trump to say, look, the Democrats just want to investigate for no reason.
And that's Julian Zelizer, again, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, joining us along with Jonathan Capehart. He's an opinion writer for The Washington Post and host of the Cape Up podcast. I should add that Julian has a podcast as well, Politics and Polls, getting some differing opinion about impeachment and what the Democrats are doing or trying to do. And you can join our conversation, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@wabc.org. WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Jonathan, you wrote something recently, which is you want impeachment done right. What would be the correct way to proceed then?
Well, done right, meaning methodically. Not impetuously. And when I wrote that piece, that was before, maybe a day before, we started getting indications from the White House, actions by the White House to thwart the rule of law, defying subpoenas, ordering former staffers to not comply with congressional subpoenas. We hadn't crossed that line when I wrote that piece, which also explains why I'm very conflicted about what Speaker Pelosi and the committee chairman should do officially, whether they should just keep going the way they're going and having these hearings but not calling them impeachment hearings, or just flat out say that they are going to take a vote on starting an impeachment inquiry and then going ahead and doing it. I've been swayed over these last few weeks since I wrote that piece that standing up for the rule of law and defending the Constitution against a president and an administration that's continually thumbing its nose at it, and on top of that, having an attorney general who is proving to be the president's personal lawyer as opposed to the lawyer for the nation, sort of demands that Congress act on its constitutional duty to be a check and balance on the executive. But that doesn't mean that you go about it in a way that is not thoughtful, that is not clear and methodical in what you're doing. Last week, there was a story reportedly in a meeting, a very contentious meeting, as it was reported, of the caucus, where Speaker Pelosi right. reportedly said that she wanted to see President Trump in prison, right. not just impeached. And you stand a better chance of doing that if you go along in a methodical way that sends a signal to the courts that are going to play a role in that ultimate goal, that reported ultimate goal, sending a message to the courts that you didn't do this impetuously, you didn't do this willy-nilly, you did this by exhausting every avenue possible to hold the chief executive accountable.
It reminded me of the 2016 chant of lock her up. I mean, it came sort of close, Jonathan, to that territory. Julian, let me turn to you and ask you, Marta wants to know, what exactly are the reasons to impeach Trump? Can you give us, for you, I guess, the most damning finding from the Mueller report?
Sure. The obstruction of justice section is pretty clear. There's many instances where the president privately, not just publicly, is trying to block a very legitimate investigation. The first part of the report really explains why that investigation was legitimate, why the fears in the intelligence community and law enforcement were very real. And he went out of his way to do it. It didn't always work. But he certainly tried many, many times. And that has to be complemented with the public record, where the president used his Twitter bully pulpit to constantly go after the investigation, float promises and threats, as we saw it play out in real time. So, if obstruction was bad enough with Richard Nixon, it's hard for me to read through that report several times and not see why there's not a basis to at least consider whether articles of impeachment are warranted.
Just a quick follow-up, Julian. Is there something between not impeaching and impeaching? And then some have talked about censure and other things that the House can do, because it's clear the Senate is not going to throw the president out of office.
Well, that's very clear at this point that they won't. I never say never in that politics
anyway.
Can change. But right now it's unlikely. And I think a lot of Democrats are leery of a censure, which was floated during the Clinton impeachment, because in some ways it's just so weak, it's better not to do anything. But look, if the House votes for articles of impeachment after accumulating more evidence and holding serious centralized hearings, that in itself would be the most powerful censure you can have, even if the Senate won't go along with it. And then it would be, frankly, everyone talks about, would the Senate end up exonerating the president? But another way to look at it, you'd have Senate Republicans becoming publicly complicit with a president who's been exposed as corrupt and impeached. And so I think impeachment is that answer if it's used.
Do you think, Jonathan, there's so much talk about the risks for the Democrats about whether to proceed or not proceed on impeachment. Are there risks for the Republicans in their stance?
I'm sure there are risks, and following on what Julian just said, and that's being complicit. Folks in the House are going to have to, they're going to be up for re-election in 2020, and they're going to have to go back to their constituents, particularly in swing districts, and explain why, given everything that is known, why they are continuing to stand by the president. And that's just on what's been revealed in the Mueller report. Leave aside attacks on health care, the impact of the trade war and tariffs on local economies, and then in particular in the Senate, where the electoral landscape for Republicans is treacherous, where you have more than a few Republicans in states who are deemed endangered. All Democrats need are to flip four seats in the Senate to retain get back control. It's not going to be easy. But if you have, to Julian's point, and impeachment proceedings go through and then a trial in the Senate where those Republicans have to take a vote about, after everything that might be presented, take a vote to convict or not convict, they will then have to defend that, seeking re-election. So there's no slam dunk for anybody in this, but if I were on Capitol Hill, I would rather be the Democrat in that situation than a Republican running for re-election, having to defend a president who was on trial for impeachment on top of all the other things, policy things that they would have to defend.
And that's Jonathan Capehart, again, opinion writer for The Washington Post, host of the Cape Up podcast. Also with us, Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, also a CNN political analyst, and he's got a podcast that he co-hosts called Politics and Polls. And we asked both of them to join us on Radio Times because there is so much impeachment talk and we wanted to get their opinion. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Where do you stand on this issue, or are you, like many people, all over the place? Do stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. And again, if you're just joining us, Jonathan Capehart, Julian Zelizer are our guests. And we are talking about all the impeachment talk coming out of Congress, also coming from a number of the Democrats running for the presidential nomination. And we want to hear from you about where you stand on this issue. Do you care about this issue? Where do you put it in the hierarchy of your concerns? Julian, let me go back to you. And I remember the summer of 1974 when there were those hearings that were televised, and you could, almost any place you went, you could hear either John Dean or other people testifying before the House committee, talking about hush money and a burglary. Do you imagine, if we ever get to that point, that it will have the same kind of power and resonance that it had back then?
I don't know. I mean, we are in an era where the electorate is much more polarized and people are not willing to switch no matter what happens. And I do think that is rightly something everyone has to consider. It is worth noting there are actually two sets of hearings. One was in 1973. That was the Senate Select Committee. That's where Dean testified. That's where Alexander Butterfield. And even after that, all the way then in April and May of 1974, when the House Judiciary Committee was getting ready to do its impeachment inquiry, public opinion on impeachment was about where it is today.
About 40%, right?
Yeah. So it was hovering at the same level after everything, after all the Woodward and Bernstein stories, after the hearings you just mentioned. And so it's always very hard. And so I don't know if it would shake opinion. It could certainly solidify Democratic opinion about the president. It could certainly sway some independents. if they care about the balance of power. And that in itself is not irrelevant in an age of very close voting and close elections.
But what you're also telling us is that the investigation into President Nixon went on for months, even almost 2 years, right?
It did. And there were many different phases of it. And it took a lot to break Republican support for the president. Republican support for the president in Nixon's case holds steady until July of 1974, meaning just a few weeks before the president actually resigned. So even in a much less polarized age, it wasn't very easy to get those Republican senators, such as Goldwater, to say, you need to leave.
Jonathan, one feels from the, I guess, the left flank of the Democratic Party that there is a great deal of impatience to get a move on, to get this thing started.
Yes, there is impatience, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier about why Speaker Pelosi seems to be at every moment, including right now, she's speaking at a Pete Peterson Foundation event on CNN, where she's tapping the brakes on all this impeachment fervor. You know, this is something that we have to be, we meaning the American people writ large, but Democrats in particular, have to be careful of. You don't want to, or they shouldn't, despite the intense anger that there is against the president and his policies and things that have been revealed in the Mueller report, the last thing folks would want is for Congress and for the Democrats to jump out there impetuously with an investigation that ends up doing more harm than good. And to go back to what you were discussing with Julian, bringing up the fact that Republicans stood by President Nixon pretty much up until the very end. We're going to see the same thing, and we're seeing it now when it comes to President Trump. As much as there is anger and an intense desire to get rid of President Trump among Democrats, there is an equal and opposite reaction on the Republican side. The president, when he was over in Europe, bragged that his standing among Republicans was 91%. I don't know which particular poll he was citing, but that has been consistently his support among Republicans throughout his presidency, bouncing between 84 and 92%. And when you have a president who's that popular with the base and a president who has not seen fit to expand his support beyond that base, and compound that with members of his party on the Hill who live in fear of his supporters and people who could challenge them from the right, that explains why even today, with all that we know, Republicans are not running away from him. And I will be curious to see what will be that tripwire in 2019 or 2020 that breaks Republicans away from the president. Right now, I don't see what that is. If it hasn't happened now with everything that we've seen and everything that we know, I can't imagine what that would be.
Well, the only one is Representative Amash, right?
Right. He is the only person. You hear some musings from Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, but Congressman Amash is the only one on Twitter and in interviews and in his town hall stating plainly, after having read the report, why he believes the president needs to be held accountable. Until more Republicans, Democrats can say as much and scream and yell as much as they want, but until more Republicans join Congressman Amash in saying that what the president did demands accountability and demands that he be held responsible, neither of those things will happen.
Julian, here's a question from Aaron, who says, Nancy Pelosi is holding off impeachment proceedings for now, but is there a strategy for waiting until we get closer to 2020? And I guess that would be putting the hearings really right smack dab in them in the middle of a presidential election.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people have talked about this for a while, that she is being very strategic and drawing this out and waiting for the right moment when the support changes. obviously, by doing that, you get farther away from those big impact moments like the release of the Mueller report, and a certain amount of momentum fades away. I do think as we get to June and the Democrats start to have their debates, I actually think it's going to be even harder to get Republicans to, I mean, Democrats to support any kind of impeachment process. And President Trump is very cognizant of the clock. And I think the longer this it doesn't get done, the better chances are that, you know, Pelosi is never going to essentially pull the political trigger on this process. So I'm not sure Democrats are going to want to start this right in the middle of the election season as opposed to much earlier on.
Let me see what Kabita from Plymouth Meeting has to say. Kabita, welcome to Radio Times. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question has to do with a lot of this decision seems to depend on the political risk and electability of folks who will stand or not stand for it. And I guess my question is about what was just mentioned, what will be the tripwire? Because so far what I've heard is kind of educating the public on the illegal actions, including obstruction of justice, and people already know that he stood in the way of the probe. So I'm wondering, what are people, what are the guests thinking is going to be the one thing that the public will hear that suddenly people who support Trump now would not support him later?
Interesting question, Kabita. Thanks for calling in Radio Times. Jonathan, is there kind of a light bulb moment, you think, when people who do not support impeachment will say, oh my goodness, yes?
That I don't know. Back to what I said before, given everything that we've seen, I don't know what that would be. But there's something that the caller said that I want to pick up on that I think is very important. The three of us are talking about this. The caller clearly is very well aware and is keeping her finger on the pulse of everything and keeping tabs and reading everything so that she knows the ins and outs of what's happening. There was an interview done last week with on television with a Trump supporter who didn't know that the Mueller report said all the things that it said. She had no idea. And so we're dealing with a Republican populace that potentially is getting most of its news from sources that downplay the findings of the Mueller report, and a populace, you know, Democrats who are getting their news from sources that are reporting on, you know, what's actually in the report and who are learning about what's going on. But again, most people have never read the Mueller report. Most people won't read the Mueller report. And so until we get to a situation where the American people, in a bipartisan, nonpartisan way, are confronted with the facts and confronted with the findings in the Mueller report and all the other investigations and inquiries that are happening on Capitol Hill, until they are forced to confront those, most of the American people won't know what actually is happening, which is why I think there are people, Democrats on the Hill, who are pushing for impeachment inquiries, because nothing will focus the mind like televised hearings over several days with several compelling witnesses.
Julian, so hearing is more powerful than reading?
Sure. Centralized hearings and dramatic readings. One thing the president understands very well is the drama of how things play out. And I do think if you have impeachment hearings, it's very different than just lots of different oversight hearings with various people coming forward. And that in itself can focus attention. But there is another tripwire. That's Speaker Pelosi, meaning leadership really matters. And if the leaders are hemming and hawing, and if the leaders are ambivalent publicly, and even sending signals we're not going to do this, it does have an effect. It's not a surprise that even more House Democrats, especially the swing district ones, are leery of coming out because the speaker isn't going to support them right now. And so part of that tripwire is a very assertive, aggressive, a top-down approach combined with hearings. That's the only way this could possibly change and the national conversation can change. So you're kind of, Democrats are removing the key tools and then saying nothing's going to happen. And so obviously nothing happens.
But I wonder, Julian, there's a vote today on civil contempt of the subpoenas. How does the Judiciary Committee in the House, how do they force someone like McGahn to testify or even Mueller to testify?
Well, I think we talked earlier that one of the arguments is if this was impeachment proceedings, their leverage would be much greater in the courts if you had this kind of obstruction, and much quicker in terms of how the courts would treat it. And another part of it is then the administration is stonewalling impeachment proceedings, which takes on a whole other significance. It was actually part of the impeachment against President Nixon, the articles of impeachment, that he tried to stop the impeachment proceedings. So there's ways in which a heightened process might change the dynamics of what different members of the administration can do or even willing to do.
Jonathan, I wonder, this is one of the arguments against impeachment, which is to say, let the voters decide in 2020. Some people have said that when people in 2016 voted for Donald Trump, they knew what they were getting. So let the voters decide. Does that make sense to you in any way?
I understand where it comes from, but when you're talking about something as foundational as checks and balances and upholding the rule of law and ensuring the viability of the Constitution and making sure that sending a specific message from Congress that defying the Constitution and the rule of law is something that will be met with accountability. I understand why there are people who are really want this to happen, because it should happen. That's why those provisions are there in the Constitution in the first place. Excuse me, that waiting for an election that's a year and a half away, that's a year and a half more where the president is not being held to account and his feet aren't being held to the fire. In that event that I mentioned earlier where Speaker Pelosi is speaking right now, she did make it clear that, quote, impeachment is not off the table. So, Julian is right that some people believe that, the way the Democrats are acting, particularly Speaker Pelosi, that they're not taking action and they're taking impeachment off the table. But one thing that has been consistent in Speaker Pelosi's pronouncements is that she hasn't taken impeachment off the table. And I think that is having that hammer out there and ensure making it clear that, we're not doing it right now and don't think that we won't do it, I think is something that in a normal presidency, with a normal administration, would focus the mind and have people cooperate and do things the right way. But one of the things that always gives me pause with this administration is we're not dealing with a normal president, and we're not dealing with a normal administration that follows that follows the customs and the mores of, the 44 predecessors. That is a president who is an asymmetrical fighter. And so when you're dealing with a chief executive like that, you've got to be nimble and you've got to be willing to take the plunge and cross the line and start proceedings, whether your political circumstances are helped by it or damaged by it. At a certain point, politics has to be pushed aside for the sake of the country.
And Julian, we're almost out of time here. You're a historian. I'm sure historians will look back on this time and have a lot to write about.
Absolutely. And I do think it will be an important moment where the country or Congress makes a collective decision about how you can use presidential power and how far you can go in flexing that muscle. And Congress's response will last and it will create an important precedent.
Well, on that note, Julian Zelizer, as always, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
And Jonathan Capehart, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. Jonathan Capehart, opinion writer for The Washington Post. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.